5220750. You know, there are conservatives, and then there are conservatives. And let me tell you what I'm talking about. There is a like you might consider. Let me just pick a name. You might say Mike Hawker's a conservative, but Mike Hawker's not a Newt Gingrich conservative. You might say, I don't know. Pick anybody. You know, any elected leader. John Harris is a conservative, but he's not a Thomas Sowell conservative. There are conservatives, and then there are those who are just consistent. You know, we were talking about Rush Limbaugh earlier, weren't
yeah.
we?
Yeah, we were
talking about Rush Limbaugh. We were saying, think what Rush Limbaugh is. If there's an issue that I really want to know the true skinny on,
you go
of
to him.
All the talk show hosts, I'm going to tune to him. Because for 25 years, he has been dead on consistent, not wavered, not, you know, given into the seduction of liberalism. Our next guest is one of those guys. Alex Gimark, who is currently sits on the Chugach board, writes for the Alaska Standard, is one of these guys on the vein of Thomas Sowell, Walter Williams, Newt Gingrich, solid as a rock when it comes to conservative thought. And somebody who I just am a huge fan of. Welcome to the broadcast. How's that for an introduction?
I'm going to find some place to hide. Thank you much. You're far too kind, and I don't deserve to be mentioned in the same breath as those guys.
Well, no, I disagree. And I enjoy so much your columns for the Alaska Standard. I get comments on them. Of all the people that write for the Standard, I get, you know, people come up to me all the time. You, by far, are the ones they say, man, we love Alex Gimmer's columns.
Thank you very much.
You have really done your research on so many topics, global warming, the hoax, and many others, energy issues. It's good to have you.
Appreciate it. I write as much to figure things out.
Is that right?
Put it into words as anything else.
Yeah.
I find if I can put the thoughts down on paper, that helps me work through issues or things.
You know, Alex, we got a lot to talk about today, but let's get to something that really kind of disturbs me. It's the incredible lack of understanding of what our founding fathers set up in this country via a constitutionally based republic. I'm talking about Republicans who are elected to office who don't even understand what the Constitution is about. They may be small government folks. They may be even pro-business, pro-development. They may be pro-life. They may have all these basic, you know, tenets of the conservative movement, but they don't seem to grasp, you know, the seatbelt law, for example. There are a lot of Republicans who think that it's okay for government to mandate that you put a seatbelt on. Well, it's a good idea. Their litmus test for constitutionality is it a good idea? Not, is it constitutional?
It's, I think it's, a lot of it's the education. And power is seductive. It's easy to make other people's decisions. It sets you above them, and that's a terrible seductive thing to buy into.
It is seductive, and you can imagine how some of these folks, they get into power and they realize, wow, I really do have a lot of power. I feel as though it's my job not to follow the Constitution, but to do what I think will help people. And in some ways, I suppose you could say it's hard to criticize that. But if we get away from the Constitution and we start letting politicians arbitrarily do what they think is in our best interest, man, are we going to have a mess. Well, we do have a mess.
Right? We already do.
Yeah. So how do we get back to teaching? I know they don't teach us in the schools, but how do you get back to teaching the concept of a constitutional republic and basing laws on that Constitution?
I think you got to start with self-reliance. If you insist people take care of themselves, take care of their own, and be rewarded for it, you take a good big step in that direction. If they don't have self-reliance, then they open the door for the big government types to come in and run their lives.
We had a gal call our show yesterday. She's a Republican. She gives the candidates. I've seen her at Republican fundraisers. And she was talking about how she's hopeful for Obamacare. And I asked her why. She said, well, because we need change. We need some change. We need something to change. Me and my friends, we can't get health insurance. It's too expensive. I said, are you willing to let government take over health care just to have change? And she said, yes. Now, that's a Republican, Alex.
I don't have words for that. I've got a few personal medical things in my extended family, and Obamacare just scares me to death. So, We are in for a long, long slog. It's going to be tough.
It is. While we're on Obamacare, is it fixable?
The first step will be to defund it. Whatever the next Congress is, should the conservatives hold a majority or gain one, you simply defund it. And for those of us out in the general public, you disobey publicly the unconstitutional mandates.
Well, let's look at the funding issue first. It is Congress's job to appropriate the money.
Right.
So the president can't appropriate the money. It's Congress's.
Correct. And what was passed was an authorization bill. They did not pass appropriations.
Now, has this ever been done?
There are a number of things that have been passed by one Congress and not funded by future Congresses.
So that's one way to go.
It gets done all the time as the parties switch back
and forth. Oh, the Daily News isn't going to like that. Oh, my.
Well, it depends on how many pages they're publishing on by the time that happens.
Now, the second thing you recommend is civil disobedience?
Yes.
Explain how that would work.
If you're told to do something, you simply don't do it.
And buy insurance, for instance. But you got to have health insurance.
Don't do it. You don't have to buy it the way they say you need to buy it.
Yeah. And then what happens when they come to your house with guns? What do you do?
That'll be another topic.
Well, you're not calling for violence, are you?
Absolutely not.
Yeah. So what do you do, though, when they come
to
your
house? Well, you can kind of look back at the model that Gandhi sent when he took on the Brits. He was completely nonviolent, and the way he got the Brits' attention was by organizing a mass strike on the railroads.
Yeah.
All the Indians who were manning the railroads refused to work and brought the Brits to their knees, and they were gone fairly quickly after that.
Yeah. Hmm. Well, we got to do something. I'm worried that because the left controls our education bureaucracy, that unless either the young people today have parents who are willing to deprogram them, the vast majority of Americans out there are under the mindset that it's okay to let government take away your freedom. It's okay to rely on government. It's okay to abandon self-reliance.
There are too many people that believe that.
So how do we turn that? How do we change that?
You have to turn the money off. Turn the money off is the first step. Self-reliance is the second.
The best way to slow the outrageous growth of government is to starve government.
Yeah.
Well, I'd like to see that on a state level.
Yeah.
Now, how do we do it on a state level?
Turn the money off.
But how do you do that practically?
You got to start electing people who will turn the money off.
Yeah, turn the money off. I like that. I've not heard that before.
It's too simple, and it's very difficult to do.
Yeah, yeah. So give me an example of how you turn the money off on a state level.
What program are you looking for?
Yeah, we'll just...
SCHIP could be one.
SCHIP is what?
SCHIP is the Children's Health.
Okay.
And it's federally funded, and it puts basically the feds in charge of children's health care.
Yeah.
Why cannot that better be done through the churches? Better be done through charities and private organizations?
Right. Well, let's take the Sean Parnell wants to give everybody free college. If they're smart enough to work hard enough to get a C-, how would you cut that thing?
The way to make things expensive is by making them free.
Yes, absolutely.
You make them not only, and it's a double whammy, not only do you make them expensive, but you make them worthless.
That's right.
If everybody
can
do that, they're not worth it. College's got to be worth something.
You know, I remember Sharon Lahow talking about, you remember Sharon Lahow?
Yes.
She now works for Governor Parnell, and she talked about how that she worked the slime line, and she'd work summers, and she'd work 12 hours a day, but when she'd go to school, she studied because she was paying.
Oh, yeah.
And when she graduated, she didn't owe a dime. And there's so many people these days, I know people still in their early 30s who are paying $400, $500, $600 a month in college loans. And, you know, that's a choice if you want to pay that back. But for the government to come in and take money from you and I to give it to someone else so they don't have to work to put their way through college, I don't see how that's not conservative.
Obamacare had an attachment to it that basically nationalized the student loan program for colleges, which guarantees the money flow or the cash flow in the colleges. And it puts the Obama administration and Congress in charge of who gets to go to college and who gets paid.
Yeah.
You control the money, you get to control the perks.
Yeah, we're talking to Alex Gilmark, who is a board member of True Gadget Electric. He's also a columnist for the Alaska Standard. I read something by Thomas Sowell that was just terrifying. I don't know if you saw it. It was a couple weeks ago. It was actually last week. And he talked about how Obamacare will give the government access to all of our medical records, and how that this could potentially lead to a stifling of criticism of the government, because the government is going to know everything. They're going to know your income. They're going to know your health concerns. You know, if you have some kind of disease that might be sexually transmitted, that, you know, the government, you know, the government knows that. And the expansive power of the government, especially when you look at how much more power the IRS is getting into Obamacare, this is really going to give the government much more power to intimidate its citizenry.
It has worked that way in Great Britain and Canada with their National Health Service. The foundation for that database was passed as part of the stimulus a year and a half ago.
What's going on in our country, Alex? What's happened? How do we go from Reagan to Obama? When Reagan was president, everyone was proud of this country. There was a love for freedom. There was a will to fight evil. All of a sudden, we all got our hands out and we're saying, yeah, take my freedom. I don't care. What happened?
We go through cycles, and you go through cycles where you fight very hard and you enjoy the fruits of those labors. But as years go on, you kind of forget. And as the good times roll, it's easy for people to, with other plans and other intentions, to come in position. This is not unlike what we saw in the 1970s. It's not unlike what happened in the 30s. It's happened before. This country goes through cycles, and this is going to be a bad one. And
this is a bad one.
It's going to be tough
for this reason. We're creating too many dependents, and we're getting to the point where we're having more dependents than people who actually supply the money for the dependents, and the dependents are going to control the electorate, especially if we grant amnesty to all the illegal immigrants. All of a sudden, those who actually work, Alex, we're going to be such a small group of people, we're going to have no power at the ballot box, we're going to have no say in the electoral process.
One of the books that's over the last year and a half that's been hurtling up the Amazon charts is Ayn Rand's Atlas Shrugged.
Yes.
Where the productive folks basically opt out.
Yes.
That, no, we're not going to do this for a while.
Right.
And the modern world tends to move very, very quickly because of the way that we control information or use information. Whatever that crash is going to happen very quickly, much quicker than folks expect.
You know, I read that book, I don't know, 20 years, when did it come out? You know, many, many years ago.
Late 50s.
Yeah, I read it, I think, probably 15, 20 years ago. I'm going to reread that, because I remember reading it and just having my jaw open the entire time I was reading it. And I bet it's even that much more relevant today.
Well, there's a lot of folks rereading Animal Farm in 1984 also.
Alex Gilmark is our guest. We've got a lot more with him. Stay with us. Be right back.
More of Dan Fagan coming up on KFQB.
Trip Mall. We're talking to Alex Gilmark, who is the columnist for the Alaska Standard and also is sitting currently on the Chugach Electric Board. Alex, it is amazing to me the controversy through the years involving the Chugach Board and the IBEW and the ratepayers versus the union. And how are things going? We haven't heard a lot about that controversy as of late. Has things settled down a little bit?
The way this business works is that if things are quiet, things are going well.
Yeah.
And it's kind of the parent teenager routine.
Yeah.
The ratepayers want to hear quiet, and we have three new contracts with the IBEW that we approved last month, and they were reasonable contracts. Everybody was fairly happy with them. They've been posted. And we are set for another 3 years.
How many people on the board?
Seven of us.
So there'd be a chairman and then six members?
Correct.
And how many seats open this election cycle?
Two of us.
Two of the board seats are open.
Correct.
You
and PJ Hill,
who are current board members.
Correct.
And you're more along the pro-consumer line.
Both of us are.
You're focused on keeping rates low.
Yes.
Obviously, there are some on the board who are more about policing the union, so it's a good balance.
We have some people who work on the left-hand side of the politics.
Right.
And currently the pro-consumer or conservatives hold a 4-3 very
right.
thin majority.
Right. So if you or PJ lose your seats to the two liberals running, then all of a sudden the union will control the co-op again.
As will the Greens.
As will the Greenies.
As will Mark Begich.
As will Mark Begich. Now, how Mark Begich?
He is, one of the things that he has the ability to do is money and grant for electrical projects for rural Alaska. So he can tend to drive the bus for choices made for future generations based on free money.
And so you can waste it on a bunch of silly programs that aren't productive and aren't really in the best interest of the ratepayers.
There's been a lot of money wasted on generation in the lower 48 over the last 5 or 10 years.
Yeah, yeah. So this is a crucial election.
They all are, but this one is pretty important.
Yeah. And you and P.J. Hill,
yes.
who are the two conservatives, and there are two other gals who are running against you?
Susan Reeves and Ricky Liebman.
Yeah, and both of them pretty liberal?
Both of them from the green side of the force.
Yeah, boy. You know, it's such a simple that you got ratepayers. They may think this is a small thing, but if you want your rates to go up, this is the way to go. You know,
this is kind of an important time. Over the course of the next 10 years, we're going to be making a transition from primary reliance on cooking natural gas to primary reliance on something else.
Yeah.
That's going to take about 10 years.
Yeah.
Usable natural gas. Or enough to do what we need to do and what NSTAR needs to do, goes through about 2014.
Yeah.
And you've got about 6 years until something else is in place.
Now, these ballots go out when?
Ballots should be out Monday.
Monday?
Yes.
And one of the problems that I've always remembered happens with this is all the IBEW employees, they vote. 100% of them vote. So, folks, if you're a Chugach member and you're not a member of the union, you better vote, too. Or you're not going to get your voice heard.
More is better than less.
Yeah. Now, what's your thought, Alex, on this in-state line that everyone's talking about? Is that something that
I wish them luck.
How do you?
It may the lowest cost for delivered gas into South Central I have seen out of a in-state gas line is about 2 to 3 times.
Okay.
But the highest that NSTAR was paying a year and a half ago for natural gas.
Now, what if the state picked up the tab, or at least most of the tab, for the pipeline construction? Would that change things?
There's still the tariff, and you're still bringing that stuff 800 miles.
So even if the state picks up the majority of the expense,
right,
you're still going to see a significant increase in the cost of gas here in South
right.
Central.
And keep in mind that if you're asking a government to take up start paying for stuff, that ends up skewing the economics.
Yeah, yeah.
We're probably better off here in Cook Inlet with importing natural gas.
Even with piping our own gas down?
It's 800 miles is a long ways.
Wow.
And LNG...
Because, you know, people think that all they're thinking, well, we got all this gas, why are we importing?
We do.
But what about the value added? What about the manufacturing that this energy could bring?
It would be a wonderful thing. If we're allowed to do it.
Yeah, yeah. Wow, so it won't be cheaper. Even if the state picks up the tab for the pipeline, it'd still be cheaper to import the LNG.
The last number I saw, and things move all over the place, is $25 a million cubic feet.
My goodness. Alex Gilmark, it's always a pleasure. Hope you come back. Thank you so much. Appreciate it. We'll take a break. Be right back.